This week is a big week at the Levin Zinglin household. Our eldest son, Isaac, has received his final letter back from colleges in the midst of his college search. So far, so good. Yeah, this is, he got the fifth and final one back. There's delight in this. There is also absolute terror. Because I remember me at that age. I remember me as a final semester high school senior having figured out the mysteries of the world. Having realized at last how everything works. Figuring out what's wrong, what's right, how we should do better, how especially everyone else should do better. I had figured it out. Hadn't even graduated yet. I was a tough person to be around. Still a tough person to be around, especially tough then to be around. And my son Isaac, he has not waited until the beginning of his final semester of high school. He got a jump on giving us feedback. He's always been a giver. He's always ready to tell us what we're doing well, ready to tell us what could be a little better. His favorite feedback is what we get absolutely wrong. He just delights in it. He loves it. He loves getting to fix us. And good on him. I remember me at the age. I remember the enjoyment I got from giving feedback. I remember how much responsibility I felt to make sure that everyone around me finally figured out how we should be in the world. I remember it, and so I delight in creating room for him to do the same. And he does, regularly. He does. He's good at it. He's got a keen eye, a sharp wit. It's been made known to me that my music is all wrong. He's got no idea. It's been made known to me that my fashion sense is way off. It's been made known to me, and in fact, there are rules under our roof that I may not dance. Ever. He's saving me from myself. That's his goal in life, is to save me from myself. And somewhere in there, he must have some sense about where that lens is coming from, right? What is it deep down inside him that gives him some sense of right and wrong? It's in there somewhere, and right now all he's doing is exercising the verbalizing of that. But he's at that wonderful stage in life where I remember so much myself, where we get this great opportunity to launch, right? And in the launching, we create this really vital distance between our place of origin and our new places, between us and the world. And we launch out into it. And in that launching, we find space out there where we get to differentiate from who we've been, who we are, who we might be becoming. And there's room in there to risk and to experiment and to test out ideas, to test out new behaviors, right? I don't even want to know the behaviors. It's coming. Launching. Vitally important for him because he has to go away before he can come back. And it is not just in the leaving, but it is in the returning that the dialogue between past, present, and future really happens, right? Where he can look back on us and say, hopefully, some truth to us, but hopefully, develop some compassion for our inability to be perfect. One hopes, right? Some compassion, but at the very least, perspective, right? That it's the distance and it's the differentiating that gives us perspective on life and of our place within it, of our place within the community of humankind, right? And we develop a voice that is not only a voice that knows how to claim and articulate clearly our sense of truth, what is good and what is right and just, but it also gives us our ability to name that in a way that is connected, right? Because as the great Friedman says, differentiation isn't simply about lopping everyone off and going and being perfect on an island. Differentiation is about figuring out how to speak truth in relationship, how to be differentiated and connected, how to love well, right? That's what launching is about. Leaving so that we can return, so that we can leave, so that we can return, because there's a dialogue in that, right? It's how different perspectives collide. It's how we come together to find truth in the midst of dialogue. But you have to leave to do it. And he's going to do it. Hopefully. He's going to do it. He'll come back to us eventually. And in the midst of all of the feedback, the great hope for us would be that he can communicate to us his deepest core values. But in the midst of all this petty feedback, we can hear within it his sense of his deepest core values. What matters most, not only in his life, but his sense about what matters most in the life of the world, right? What are our hopes and our dreams and our aspirations, and what is my responsibility and what are my obligations to see it come to fruition? Right? That's our hope. Whatever it is, however he does it, our great hope is that he believes that that is his project, right? He believes that's his life's project, to do that work, to claim it, to test it. And the testing early on will be clumsy. It will be hard to hear. I'm guessing it's going to be hurtful. And it's essential. He'll say things to us that are hard to hear, right? He'll say things to us that are hard to hear. Jesus in today's story is making a homecoming, right? He launched. He's been off on his own. He's had a desert experience. He's been baptized. He's heard great things about himself. He's well aware, whatever I do in the world, I'm beloved. He's well aware, whatever I do in the world, I'm claimed as a child of God. Whatever I do, so long as it's faithful to who God's trying to make me, to help me find within myself how I've been made, whatever that is, I am the delight of God's heart. And more than that, that God delights in the discovery of that. Right? God delights in the process. It's not fail, 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 finally get it right. God delights in the desire to discover it. Right? So the whole journey is blessed. Jesus has been gone. Jesus has returned. Jesus is in the midst of his hometown, of his community, right? The people who know him, the people who've got expectations for him about his possibilities in life. People have heard strange things about him. They don't quite know how to interpret it. Some of them know him from their early years. There's all sorts of great hidden gospels about the childhood of Jesus, right? So you know folks are telling stories on the playground. You know that people have assumptions about the limitations of what's possible for Jesus, right? Because of his family of origin. You know his mom. You know his dad. You know that weird birth thing. There's something weird about Jesus, right? He's probably more liability than asset, right? And yet, here he comes back among us to tell us what he's discovered. And the way that he does that is in the midst of his worshiping community, where he shows up and he finally, for the very first time, gets to speak his voice, having experienced distance, having experienced a new perspective from that distance, having differentiated somewhat from his family's cares and concerns, from the cares and concerns of his community, having differentiated from their assumptions about what the right, best, next step is for them as individuals and as a community to be faithful to God. Having gotten away from all of that, Jesus shows up into the midst of them and he claims for himself a specific personal narrative, a specific statement of what matters most. In the midst of all the cares and concerns of community around him, some of whom are wondering, is this the one we've been waiting for? Is this the one who's going to return Israel to its imperial might? Is this the one who's going to build up our government? Is this the one who's going to build up our military might? Is this the one who's going to make sure that our economy is humming again? Into the midst of all that as possible next best step, Jesus shows up and he reads his text. You can imagine it. It's the one that's dog-eared or crinkled on the side. His favorite text rolls open in front of him. And what he tells his community is, despite all your cares and concerns, despite all your assumptions about what it is that's going to reaffirm the integrity of the nation of Israel, our next best step is not about religious purity. Our next best step is not about political power. Our very next best step, our truest, most faithful next step in the renewal of Israel, is to reaffirm again that we are loving, that we are just, that the litmus test for success, the metric that matters more than anything else, is our care and concern for the least and the lost. It is not what our balance books look like. It is not how distant we are from the other. It is not how strong our military is. It is not that others fear us. It is not our ability to keep others out. It is our tenderness in letting them in. It is our compassion in holding them up. It is our just care and concern more than anything else to set every captive free, to call people back from death to life. Jesus says, you want to be faithful to the God of Israel. You want to do the next best thing. Do that. Everything else will fall into place. Be faithful, and everything else will fall into place. Advent and Christmas is about God on arrival. Who's this one we expect? Oh, he shows up. Epiphany is about God on display. Jesus claiming for us and proclaiming for us, you want to be in relationship with God? Well, this is the God you're going to be in relationship with. And guess what? That God is differentiated from your expectations of that God. That God has God's own voice. That God has God's own shape and God's own priorities. And if you want to be in relationship with that God, you're not going to shape that God to your own whim. You will have to decide if that's the God you love. And if that's the God you love, that's the God you'll get on board with. Lent is about that God on trial. And we know that that God is not popular. We know that that God calls us to sacrifice. We know that that God calls us to risk. We know that that God calls us to lean into our imaginations. Sure, to put a life together, to cobble together a life that's shared, to have a roof and to have a floor and to have heat and light, to have books, to have statements about what we think God is up to in the world. But to recognize that at a certain point, to be faithful to that God, we've got to be able to create some distance from those aspects of us. We've got to be able to differentiate from those expectations that keep us captive to that as the snapshot of faithfulness. And we've got to be able to get out of ourselves and develop some perspective, lest we find ourselves captive to last year's life with God, disconnected from this year's life with God. And if we know anything, God is about the present moment, about being faithful to that. Not being caught in the crystallized codes of yesterday, gleaning from them the treasure for sure, but knowing that they serve God's purposes today. And like Isaac, who's heading off, who'll come back, a bunch of the stuff he'll trim off, a bunch of the stuff he doesn't need from us anymore, but he'll claim the main thing, And it's that main thing that will be his true north for every decision he makes hereafter. And Jesus asks us to do the exact same thing. To experience distance, to create it. To practice differentiation from ourselves and our patterns of a life together. And to do the hard work of deep, deep discernment. Dissedere, the cutting away of what no longer serves its purpose to keep us in right relationship with God and God's world. It may sound simple, but it's tricky. Think of the hard things we hear on a regular basis about things we care about so much. I think about the things I care about that Isaac has zero interest in. It breaks my heart that he doesn't know anything about early 90s grunge, nor does he care to know. He doesn't need it. But what he does have, what he does need, is a deep love for music, a deep love for art, a deep love for things that are beautiful. That will serve him. That will serve him. So Jesus asks us during the season of Epiphany to turn on the light for ourselves, to pay attention to the ways that we're free and the many ways that we're captive, to see if among us we can't practice the annual discipline again of saying, what is the main thing? Do we have the main thing in the position of the main thing, or is it hidden behind a whole bunch of other stuff? Can we right ourselves to be in right relationship with God? In the midst of so much confusion, in the midst of competing interests, in the midst of a world around us that tells us if you want a place at the table, you better work on purity or you better work on political power, we are asked to work on faithfulness, pure and simple, to be shaped, to be formed, to be visibly present to the world as the real Jesus incarnate, the risen body of Christ, which is the church by baptism. That is our call. That is our identity. That is our sole purpose. And it's good. It's good news. It's hard work. And it's ours. Amen.